Hello, welcome to the Diary 101 podcast. I am your host, Aka Kandelo Kandepwe, also known as Aka. I know, it never gets old, but it's my favorite thing on my podcast. Yay, I can't believe I have a podcast. It's always me every single day. So today's conversation is something I have been looking forward to because I am such a sustainable living person. In my many little ways, I like to bring sustainability into my life. And the fact that now we get to start having these conversations because we can now see the impact of just global warming and climate change, all those conversations. But that's not only the reason why we talk about sustainability. So there's so many elements of sustainability. And this person I'm bringing on board today as a guest isn't just about sustainability, but I do think of you that somehow his path, but also I get to see his work about on small businesses and just other cool stuff he does. So with nothing or more or no delay, I really butchered that part. I'd like to bring on board Nick Murphy. Hi, Nick.
Hi, Aka. Thanks for having me on.
Good. You're actually Nicholas.
Yes.
Nicholas. I forget that all the time.
Yeah.
How are you? How are you doing?
Very good. Very good. Thank you. I'm currently in Accra, in Ghana. So I've been out here for the past 2 weeks and I'll be here for another few weeks before spending some time back in the UK.
Ooh. How's the weather in Accra?
It's nice. Usually at this time of year it can be too hot, but it's fine. It's not too bad at the moment. But usually Ghana is very, very hot.
My mom tells me that all the time because my mom is in Ghana and she's like, oh my goodness, this place is so hot. And I'm like, it's getting hot here or getting into summer in Zambia. So I'm like, yeah. Well, she says we can't compare. So I'm like, ah, okay.
Yes, thank you. I get you.
So, I know you're in Ghana because you are working on a few stuff there, right? And you co-founded a company that I'm failing to pronounce. You actually co-founded two or three initiatives. But yes. I'd like to talk about the one that has to do with a payment gateway system. Yeah.
So yeah, let me do a quick overview of all of the companies and how they came to be. So I first came to Ghana 8 years ago, and I was working on a project in the second largest city, Kumasi, which was working with small, medium-sized businesses for 3 months, helping them, you know, scale up their operations, make business plans, et cetera, et cetera. So there I met a bunch of Ghanaian consultants as well, and a few of us stayed in touch. And then in 2019, we all got together and we created a consulting company called Startup Lounge Africa. And at the beginning, actually, it was just a podcast where we interviewed startup founders. But then what it morphed into over 5 years was a full-blown consulting company where we support European companies come and explore opportunities in sub-Saharan Africa. And we try and also to help sub-Saharan African companies explore opportunities in Europe as well. But through that work, what we realized was there was a real issue around payments and flow of cash. So when you're dealing either with the UK or Germany and Ghana or Kenya or Zambia, for example, yeah. It can be quite tricky to move money around for businesses. It's getting a bit easier for remittances for sort of individuals, but for businesses, there's less options out there, which is why we decided to start a fintech called Kutana Pay. And Kutana is Swahili. It means to meet, to connect. So in essence, what we're trying to say is we're connecting pay between across African countries. For example, if you were in Ghana and you wanted to do some business in Kenya, we can support that, but also between African countries and Europe and the US for now. So that's what we're doing with Kutana Pay.
That's interesting. Then with all that, how did you end up with the initiative Sustainable Living, where you got to travel the Africa and write stories?
Yeah, so this was when you think about investing or doing business in Africa, particularly from a European perspective, I think it's clear and I think it's fair to say that Africa has a bit of a PR issue. It doesn't get good press, and that's the fault of the charities and the NGOs who try and paint this really Africa in a very poor light to try and get money. For their projects. So everyone's malnourished and there's drought and there is those problems. That's that there's no escaping that. But what's often missed is all the success and the good stories that Africa has to tell. And we found that and we wanted to take that sort of challenge on and show the world, hey, no, there's so much more going on here than you think there is. And we wanted to put the sustainability lens on it for two reasons. The first one is a lot of African countries are on the forefront of the impacts of climate change. So, for example, in Zambia, recently and sort of ongoing is there's an issue with drought and lack of water. Zambia relies massively on hydro to produce its electricity and its energy, and of course, for people to drink and for the crops, etc. So that becomes a massive issue for Zambia, and they have to innovate around that. And innovating around things like solar is one way of pivoting away from the full reliance on hydro energy. But so that's one thing is Africa's on the brunt of a lot of the impacts of climate change. But because of that, and because there's a lack of investment, Africa that's very well documented, gets the least amount of investment globally. People have to be very innovative to solve the problems. You can't just throw money at these problems and resources because they're not as available as elsewhere. So what you really start to see in these pockets is some real interesting innovation, which often can then start leading the way globally. So that's really what we wanted to show is Africans are not waiting on, Europe to come and save them or Elon Musk to come and save them. There's some great innovations here that actually we need to get behind and we can adopt in our own countries as well because they have the potential to make a huge impact. So that was the sort of rationale for the documentary series that we made, which is called, we decided to call it Our Sustainable World. We initially were going to call it Sustainable Africa, but we thought, no, we wanted to make it a global thing, and really take it to the world. So we called it Our Sustainable World. And we were able to film 21 businesses across seven African countries in about a 6 or 7 month period, which we are releasing at the moment. We're almost halfway with the releases, and we expect to be finished around February next year is when we'll finish the season, and then hopefully we can get some funding for a season two.
I can't wait for season two. I hope you come back to Zambia.
Yes, me too.
I hope you guys come back to Zambia again. This got me thinking. So you have Startup Lounge Africa Kutana. I hope I'm pronouncing right. I'm pronouncing that right. And our sustainable world. And I'm so curious to know, have you ever thought about like what's your why? What inspires you to actually come up with these initiatives?
Yeah, so one of the things that struck me when I came to Ghana 8 years ago was, and I was working with lots of Ghanaian consultants, was that when I went back to the UK, I had so much opportunity at my fingertips. The world was my oyster. I could go into further education. I could, join so many graduate programs. As a young person, there was so many different routes I could take. But one of the challenges across sub-Saharan Africa and is youth unemployment. So in Ghana, it's around 30% of those under 33 are unemployed. I think South Africa has one of the worst rates in the world. I think it's over 50% of young people under 33 are unemployed. So, and that's down to a lack of opportunity. And when you think about, well, how do you get more opportunity? That's the sort of the exam question. So one of the ways that we thought with Startup Lounge Africa was through trade and doing more business with Europe, by bringing businesses to Europe to set up companies, to set up, you know, opportunities to bring jobs, et cetera, to that. So that was kind of with the Startup Lounge side of things, but also to take, you know, businesses that are in Ghana and across sub-Saharan Africa and open up Europe to them to bring more opportunities for them to make revenue, to expand, and to then employ more people. And then Katana plays into that idea, which is how do we make it easier to trade across these countries and with other continents for small, medium-sized businesses, because they are, you know, and this is sort of typical across most countries, is SMEs are the backbone of any economy. They employ the most people, they're responsible for the most amount of GDP. Of course, you have large organizations in every country, but they, you know, don't make as much of an impact as, you know, all the small and medium-sized businesses combined. So it's how do we bring those types of businesses that are the backbone of economies, that employ the most people and create the most opportunities, how do we help them expand and grow from their perspective? So yeah, that really was the inspiration behind all of that. It's all about opportunity. And a lot of the time it starts with economic opportunity.
That's so true. You're also kind of reminding me why I'm starting my own business and why this specific business. Because I got to go to America and I got to see people my age have the world as their oyster, have these opportunities that would enhance them as individuals. And me coming back home to Zambia and looking at the gap in which young people here are struggling with just even the basic resources to enhance them. So I know you would like to, you focus more on businesses, like small, medium enterprises. I like to focus more on individuals. I'm always thinking, how do I help an individual to bridge the gap between them and the resources they need to reach their full potential? And this is kind of like what pushes me on most days, and this is why I have the podcast to bring people like you, Nicholas, to just have conversations so that people in Zambia and Africa can start hearing these conversations to say, oh, okay, there really is a different world out there than the one we see every day, and how do we get these resources to actually reach our full potential? And I also think that would actually help them economically and just even as countries in Africa, that would help us a lot. Yeah, that's just me.
Yeah, I mean, I met just to paint the picture. I met a student, a PhD student in Kenya, and they went to Europe, and they got a master's degree from a, you know, a top European university, and they came back to Kenya, and they couldn't get a job, so they had to become a bodaboda rider. I don't know if that translates to Zambia, but like a motorbike taxi. And that was the only job they could get for a long time before they got a bit of luck and got a PhD to continue studying. So that shows you just how real the problem is, that highly educated people are just not getting the opportunities for work.
And it's just not the highly educated people. And one thing I also like to mention that I had a breakfast date with a person studying in Kenya, and he talked about how different the landscape is from Kenya and Zambia, right? Mostly a lot of organizations actually want to trade from Kenya, South Africa, Nigeria, for so many reasons, right? And he talked about how, for the lack of better terms, intense, or how focused the young people are there compared to the young people in Zambia. And we had these conversations, and the type of tools they use and how they are utilizing AI, all those conversations. And it's like really interesting on my end, because now I travel and I have conversations with my other friends from different countries, and we see that. And we're like, okay, so what do we need to do to be there?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, for sure. But we'll get there eventually.
We will get there eventually. And I think one of my favorite things that has been getting to me is me as an individual deciding not to probably say, for example, work for an accounting firm in Zambia and say, I want to work for an accounting firm in South Africa or Europe. And then realizing that, oh, I actually don't have the qualifications like that. I need to add on for me to just be at the same level as everybody with my degree. That hurts. That hurt my feelings. I was still making peace with that, but those are some of the challenges I'm trying to bridge. And it's so interesting to just look at it.
Yeah, for sure.
When you look back to your childhood, what moment do you think defined, or define your definement moment, where you're like, ah, I really knew I'd be this, or you had to work through finding your purpose?
When I was at high school, we have these concepts in high school called like a school captain. I don't know if you have it here. So essentially, it's someone who represents the school, or they call it like a head boy or a head girl.
So, yeah,
you've got that kind of, okay, good. So in my final year of school, it's always a final year student who takes it on. So I was, you know, went through the process. You had to apply and you sort of went through a panel, and you got essentially, I got selected for that. So I think that was the first time, my first exposure to what you'd maybe call a leadership role, or an ability to be seen as a leader. I know you're still a kid and you're still at school, and it's very light-hearted, and not too much responsibility. But I think that was the first time where I thought, wow, you know, there's people actually see me as someone who could be a leader. And I think that could have helped with a mindset shift about who I was and the type of person I could be. And the opportunities that could lie ahead of me, because I could be seen as a leader and could, you know, grow up to become a leader one day. So I'd say if I was to pick one that was a defining moment, I guess that could be one. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I like that you've gone back to high school and talked about it that way. When you look at your friendships, high school, after high school, because I do know you're a busy man, what does that mean for you? Like, do you still keep in touch with the high school friends, or you outgrew those relationships?
No, so it's quite interesting. Me and my partner Talia are very different when it comes to friendships. So I have a very close, small group of friends that I've known for pretty much all of my life, since, you know, I was 4 or 5 years old. There's, you know, maybe eight people in that group. And obviously there's some others, but there's always been a sort of core group throughout my life that are still around today. You know, people are getting older and have families and that they need to take care of, so we don't get to hang out as much as maybe we used to, but we're all definitely still very close. But I don't make too much like new friends to bring into that group. I meet a lot of people, and you know, particularly through work, you know, you meet lots of people and you have good relationships with them. But I've always leaned more on that sort of core core group, whereas my partner Talia has a million friends, and yeah, it's hard to keep up with her sometimes. At least when I go back home, I know there's like, six people I need to see, and then that's that. Whereas with Talia, it's quite different.
I love your partner. When I met Talia, we were like friends. We're like, hi, hi. Like we had our whole moment, and I get her. I also understand what you mean. I'm just realized, I guess I'm very social because I work in cafes now and I meet random people and I'm in a conversation for 10 minutes. I'm like, oh, this is wasting my time. But I also have like that core friendship. I do think you and I are introverts. We know that. I have that core friendship where we add dates on our calendar and we make time and everybody's busy, but we're like, those are just my friends. And it's like one of my favorite thing in the world. How was traveling the world with your partner, Talia? I would say traveling Africa.
Yeah, so I mean, traveling with your partner is an incredible experience. It doesn't matter where in the world it is, but I think it was particularly special because we had a lot of sort of first time, I guess, moments together throughout that trip. So first time, safari, seeing lions and things like that is very special and incredible. Incredible memories. We went kite surfing off the coast of Tanzania and Zanzibar. Got to meet so many incredible people throughout that time. But it wasn't always easy in plain sailing because it was also the first time that me and Talia had worked together. So what we realized was we had very different working styles. Talia's very, very, organized. And likes to have everything sort of mapped out, whereas I'm much more high level, it'll work itself out kind of attitude. As long as we're going in the right direction, the details will work themselves out. So Talia, we found that challenging at first, but eventually what we sort of realized was that. So yeah, we found a way that we could work together that would utilize both our skills. So for example, I'm very good at just pushing the episode when we're doing editing, for example. I'm really good at just pushing an episode forward and creating a storyline and a shape, just kind of out of thin air, essentially. And what I is really good at is going through that and bringing it all together so it all makes sense. So, as I said, it was difficult at the beginning when we were working together, but what we eventually learned was, a way that we could, benefit from each other's skills and work together and really use that as a bit of a superpower. So, for example, when we're doing editing, what I'm really good at is just creating a general episode out of all the footage that we've got and just kind of throwing stuff together and making something work. Whereas Talia can then come in after I've done that and go through it in detail and make sure everything flows and we've got the right storyline and really use her sort of detailed mind to bring it all together. So it was difficult at first, but we found a way that works well for both of us now.
So I'd like to know, what did you learn about yourself the past 10 years?
Yeah, so I'd say perseverance and patience are two key things I've learned to, particularly when you're doing work in say Ghana and sub-Saharan Africa, things can take longer than maybe you're used to, and that can go for everything from something as simple as a car journey, all the way to trying to get licensing and working with governments, et cetera, everything takes a lot longer, so you need patience. And I've learned that's some a trait I have, fortunately. And then also perseverance to keep going when things can go wrong quite a lot when you're working on businesses. There is some highs, but there's a hell of a lot of lows. and you need to be able to persevere and continue and keep going and keep fighting every battle and every fire, and then you eventually get there, hopefully.
If you could give a young startup advice, what advice would you give them?
The advice I would give them if they're sort of just starting or just building would be, you know, just go for it. What are you waiting for? Don't wait until you've got the perfect thing to release it. As soon as you've got something to show, go out and show it and get feedback. See if people will buy it. See if there's something in what you're doing. The quicker you can get feedback on what you're doing, better, because that will help shape what you're doing. What you have today is not what you're going to have in 2 years. It will look different. It might look slightly different, or it might look completely different. But one thing is, it will be different. And if it's not different, you have a problem. You need to keep, you know, evolving and improving. So yeah, that would be my advice. Just go for it. Get it out there, and keep evolving.
That's interesting. It's like the lean methodology, where you keep working on something, on the prototype, going back and taking it to the clients and getting feedback, rediscovering it, renewing it, whatever term we can use, just to learn more and grow.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it. Fast feedback loops. That's what you're looking for.
If you go back to your childhood, what advice would you give Nicholas, young Nicholas?
That's an interesting one. I would maybe advise him to start earlier his entrepreneurship journey, because I had this plan, and you know, the plan was to get a degree, get a good job, in the consulting industry, work for around 5 years to build up like a good, you know, amount of work experience, and then I would always have something to fall back on if, you know, my entrepreneurship journey didn't quite work out. And I guess for me, it does feel good to have that safety net. But what I'm also conscious of is I've wasted quite a lot of years that I could have been working on a startup by working for someone else. So I think my advice would be just jump straight into it and get started, and you'll figure it out.
That's a good one. I will take that as advice for myself as well.
Yeah.
It's so sad. We are kind of coming to the end of this episode, and it's always a pleasure catching up with you. I'd like you to ask me a question.
Okay. My question for you is, if you think of 10 years from now, what will your life look like?
That's easy. 10 years from now, I should be $1 billion rich. I say this to my mom all the time. I do not see anything less, but I hope to have built a really great company that is helping change individual lives. I would be probably married. I only want to have 3 kids, so that's in the picture as well. And I hope to have the same friends 10 years from now and get to be their kids' aunties, and we get to travel the world together. So my perfect picture is marriage, build that business, keep those friendships, really also have close relationships with my family, and hope I don't lose the enthusiasm I have now, 10 years from now. I think that's the most important one. I'm such an optimist and such an enthusiastic person that, yeah, I'll work on having that same energy that I have now and have it 10 years, even when I'm juggling different things. So yeah, that's how my 10 years should look. And a lot of travel. I love to travel, so probably be traveling more.
Yeah, travel's important, and it helps open up new opportunities as well, which you're going to need if you're going to build a billion-dollar business. So, yeah, it's a great vision to have.
It's a scary vision to have. I questioned myself. I got home 30 minutes before this and I was telling my mom to say, I don't get it. Like, I really have to do this again and I'm from working. And she's like, okay, she's always like, you always have this moment where I don't want to do this again, but you're gonna go like, okay, you guys give me an hour to work, then I'm gonna come back. But yeah, I have so much faith in myself. Has it always been people having faith in you to push yourself? Or is it the faith in yourself that keeps you going?
It works two ways. I think, first of all, my family have incredible faith in me. They always have it from a young age. I was brought up in a very, very positive environment in the sense that everyone told me I was great all the time. So you kind of start to believe that about yourself a bit, which really helps in your own self-belief. I mean, had it been different and I'd been brought up in an environment where people were telling me I was stupid or useless all the time, I think that would definitely have impacted my how I see myself. So I'm a big believer in building people up, because the returns that you get on that from them in terms of the way they see themselves and what they're able to achieve is huge. So that's definitely something I want to take into. You spoke about managing kids. That's something I want to take into my family environment, which is really build the kids up to have a lot of self-belief in their own abilities.
That's more interesting, and it got me thinking. You now work more with, you work in Ghana, and you always go back to Europe home. When you look at the different landscapes, what do you look forward to in terms of the new tools and technology, for it to come to Africa or Ghana specifically?
A couple of ones is in terms of some of the more basic stuff would be, smartphones becoming in the hands of everyone. We're still not there yet. A lot of people have phones, but not necessarily smartphones that then allow them to access apps. Once people can access apps, they can access online banking, internet banking, a whole suite of information. They're then connected to the internet. Essentially, so they could have chat GPT on their phone, and have a wealth of information at their fingertips. That's huge. First of all, from an educational perspective, from a connectivity perspective, and from an opportunities perspective as well. You can do remote work with a mobile phone. So that's one thing. Then you've got some of the more advanced technology. I'd probably start with energy. There's a really unique opportunity in Africa for renewable energy. So solar, there's a massive opportunity. Hydro, you've got the Nile, that powers a lot of, say, Ethiopia, and East Africa. You've also got huge hydro presence in Zambia as well. So I think there's a real opportunity to bring energy to everyone in Africa, and there's going to be a lot of cool technologies that are deployed that can help with that. And then you've got other things like AI. So how can AI help Africa, for example? What we are trying to do at Katana Pay is build an AI credit solution. So one thing that people struggle with is credit ratings, and getting access to credit, normally because they don't have, access to the formal banking system. So we're looking at how can AI be used to solve that problem? For example, how can you use different metrics to make a decision on whether or not someone is eligible for a loan and could pay it back? So I think, yeah, technologies around energy, around AI that can help with you know, infrastructure such as financial services is going to be really interesting over the next 10 years.
Yeah, and I also really look forward to seeing all those industries you've mentioned actually evolve, because that's how we're actually having our major challenges in Zambia. Even the telecommunication industry is like really bad. So I really also look forward to seeing how transformative next 10 years would be for Africa. It's like very interesting.
Yeah, sure.
What do you look forward as Nicholas?
Yeah, I mean, coming from Europe, you know, Europe has problems as well, but I think it's fair to say that Africa can have, or some Africans have more problems. So, for example, I've not seen, and it may happen, but I'm not sure, I've not seen a child begging on the streets in Europe, but unfortunately in parts of Africa, that happens quite a lot. I was in Ethiopia and there was a lot of children on the street, and that's quite upsetting to see if you're not used to that. The only way that you're going to get the kids off the street, if there's the opportunities there for them to get themselves off it. So me personally, that's what I'm looking forward to. I'm looking forward to coming to Africa and not having to see a child on the street trying to beg for money. And I think we'll get there. It's coming, but it's going to take a lot of work and a lot of opportunity to get there for sure.
That's so true. That's something great and really nice to look forward to and attainable. It's going to take a lot of work, though, and a lot of stakeholders, but I still think it's very attainable. And yeah, I am grateful that you came on board and we had this conversation. It's always amazing to talk to you. I've learned so much. And I think when I saw you and your partner, I was like, oh, maybe I'm going to try to travel the world with my partner.
Yes, I would recommend it.
You remember that? I was just like, you guys inspired me. Question marks on that. But if he's listening, I'm like, well, we now have people to ask for tips. But Nicholas, it was great for us to catch up. And I really can't wait for the more work you do and just to see you around. And probably I might have Taya on the podcast. So pray for
me. And she might give you a very different perspective about how we work together. So,
thank you. Thank you so much. And for everybody listening, I hope you loved our conversation. I will share what Nick does in the link of our bio, all the links that you need to know. And I hope this was a great conversation and you learned something new. But this is it for me today and Nicholas. Bye. Have a good Tuesday.